Say hi.
And that's how podcasts should begin. Hello, Vanessa.
Hello, Brian.
This is a dad and daughter podcast, and it's a long time in the thinking, no time in the preparation, and let's just go for it. It's a pleasure to get started and start doing this. And first to the name of this podcast. So we've been spending about as little amount of time thinking of the name of the podcast as we've done researching this first episode, which is very little. And the name that we're coming up with is Breaking Glass. But yes, drop the last S. It's Breaking Gloss. And our surname being green is quite appropriate.
It is.
Because gloss is the Irish for green. Green the colour, that being not necessarily green the surname. There's a bit of a difference.
It works.
So, it's great to be here. How do you find yourself today? Are you good?
Good. A bit cold, but good. A bit
cold. And just as we started the podcast, you might have heard some cat purring. There is a cat in the studio. We call it a studio, but it's not really a studio. Let's dispense with the idea that this is a grand big podcasting studio. It's been recorded on the cheap on some really micro equipment. And yes, we're holding our microphones in our hand because we're so cheap, we haven't got microphone stands. So send us some microphone stands money, or our wish list on Amazon will be in the credits at the end of the show. Only joking. We have microphone stands, but they're just no good for wireless go-tos.
It's less comfortable.
So what is this podcast all about, Breaking Gloss?
That's a great question.
So I have it down to a triangulation of three topics. And it's very much the triangulation of them because they intersect so well. And that is that the sum of their angles is 180 degrees. Have I got that bit right? So this is not a mathematical podcast.
No, don't come after us for our maths.
This is the triangulation of media, technology and politics. That's not in any particular order, but where those three intersect or form a triangle, we'll triangulate around those topics, because I find that obviously there is revolutions in media and technology leads them, and then there's politics, which is, as we live these days, weeks, months and most recent years, particularly since the onset of COVID 5 years ago next month in Ireland, 5 years ago to when we got the first lockdown, that politics is influencing media in a more of a way than it really should. Yeah. I would go back to my early youth and I'd be learning civics in school, in class, and talking about bias and the influence of politics on the media landscape. And it was always there in the background. It was never big. But now it seems to be that the top stories on the news are about how politics is influencing, more than influencing, running, destructing,
running, controlled,
breaking, making, sustaining media all the time, and all about the narrative and the incumbent in the White House and people around the world who see that working and copy it, which is a kind of a popular thing to do in the last 8 years since he first entered office. So he's just entering it for the second time, so that would make it 8 years ago. And I was thinking actually overnight, just an aside to the topics we're going to discuss today, wouldn't it be great to do a countdown clock to the day he leaves office? Because it's a defined date. Yeah. He can't run again unless he changes the law. That you could have run a countdown clock to when he's gone.
Yeah. I wonder if what domain you'd use, if anyone's come up with a good one already.
I normally look into my arsenal of domains and see if I already have one that I've been sustaining with money for years and say,
just in case.
Like all the stuff I hoard, that's the reason why I kept that domain. So I'm scanning my brain. I don't think I've got anything kind of time related. I do have Facebook. Mm. F-A-Z-E buck.com.
For the downfall that may happen or may not happen of Meta.
Yeah, it's a one graphic website at the moment. It's just an upside down thumb. You know that thumb. Find us on Facebook, upside down. So, already gone off topic, and we haven't even got on to our first topic.
It's every conversation that we have.
Yeah, so look, if you know either of us, you'll know this will meander and go all sorts of ways. And probably, if we make it to podcast 12, we'll have a party because we'll have passed Podfade and we'll have stuck at what we wanted to do. The first thing I have listed here, and I've 10 things listed, and I think we're striking 3 of the 10, is...
Today.
Because 10's too much to get through. But the first one is TV going off air.
Mm-hmm.
So I work in television, and you've a keen interest in that old media. Is it fair, unfair to call television old media?
I have recently called it old media and had some looks. But for me, I think it is. Or at least traditional in its approach. Not old as in decrepit, but traditional.
So there's a lot of a movement of TV stations just going off air. Their parents deciding to not fund them anymore and say, nah, we won't have that anymore. So Eurosport 1 and 2 here in Europe, available on satellite, not free to air, but available on subscription and in a lot of subscription packages on cable. Going off air the end of this month, February 2025, in case you're listening to this in the future. That's a big move, but there has been a slow and steady shift towards pulling the plug on linear television. A lot of music channels left our screens in 2024, and somebody counted up in the UK how many channels left our screens. Now, I think they should have been fair and done a net number of losses. It would have been on a loss side, but they didn't count in anything that came to our screens new in 2024. But it was up in the high 40s, the number of stations that have left. Now, it's a lot of plus one this and standard definition that. So we lost a lot of standard definition channels where there was simulcasting of people with older set-top boxes that could only do standard definition, and they were holding on to, you know, that last few people who have a receiver in their camper van or in their holiday home. But now the standard definitions have, there's still a few around, but they're kind of one national version of a network might be on it. But these stations leaving because carriage on satellite is quite expensive. But when they leave satellite, they leave their ability to be on a screen in a hotel or on a cable package somewhere. And the formats have been leaving the airwaves. And I don't know if you've noticed this, or you probably don't even have a traditional television subscription at all, do you?
No. Too many other subscriptions, including being one of those unusual people who actually pays for YouTube Premium. But I
do too.
I am racking up enough hours on YouTube to not want to watch ads.
Okay, so let's just do a comparison. You've YouTube Premium, Netflix?
Yep.
Apple?
Yes.
I'm on a trial. That's going to run out soon. I'm on Apple. Disney Plus?
Yeah, took a break, but we're back. They do have a couple of shows that I need to rewatch when I'm bored.
Yeah, I'm on it too. I'm on Disney Plus, Netflix, currently Apple Trial. And who am I missing out on there?
Prime. Amazon Prime.
Prime, I'm on Prime as well. And I've all of these, and they're
I have more than that as well.
Bar the trial, they're all paid for monthly.
Movie as well.
A family do get to use them, and that family is everybody but you because you don't live at home with the family.
Yeah.
So that's how we can do a comparison. So we're all over the subscriptions, but you don't have like Vodafone or Virgin or Sky Glass or anything like that.
No. I don't feel that I need to. I think the only thing that I feel like I'm missing out on is BBC iPlayer. Like if I had traditional BBC that I could record all of the time, that would be useful. But if I had iPlayer, I think that is the one.
Wouldn't
thing.
It be great? Because there is a memorandum of understanding between Ireland and Britain on broadcasting matters from 2009 that did, in more ways than one, hint that there should be the availability of BBC in the south of Ireland, as there should be RTE in the north and TG Cahir, which is how it is on their Freeview system up there.
Mm-hmm.
But the reception side on the south for BBC and getting an iPlayer never really materialised. But the intent was there in that memorandum of understanding. And I don't think MOUs expire, but sometimes they do, because I've tried to find that MOU online and I can't find text of it anywhere. It's like it didn't ever exist, but it did. It was signed by Minister Eamon Ryan, who was in communications in that pre-crash government that Brian Cowan was the Taoiseach. And yeah, it was back then. And it was your man, Woodward was, I think, the Minister for Culture from the United Kingdom, who signed it with Eamon Ryan. And I know Woodward's name because it's coming back into my memory. He used to be a journalist on the television programme That's Life, and then he became an MP, and he ended up in culture, and he signed that MOU. But we're drifting away from...
Well, to stay on it for a moment, TG Cahir's production guidelines for sending in shows are the same as ITV and BBC. That's all centralised.
Centralised as in coordinated or standardised?
Standardised, yeah.
Okay.
And it lists out that it is the same guidance as the BBC.
I wonder if it comes from something like that, but it's very handy for producers to be able to work to the same standards as they go from one territory to another. But have you noticed any of these stations disappearing, or is there just more and more stuff because streamers own the space now?
It's interesting. I don't think I've had a conversation, even in a workplace, in about 6 years or more, where someone has spoken about what they saw on traditional broadcast TV and what station that was. Like, Channel 4 rewatches, or I worked in a job where we had to travel to the UK monthly and everyone knew what they were going to watch in the hotel room on BBC iPlayer whilst we were there each month and catch up. But other than Channel 4 and BBC, I don't think
people going talk about it to enough. A hotel in another country to binge watch iPlayer.
Yeah.
Ooh, never. I wouldn't think that's a good use of time. Yesterday, I was asking around the house and I was referring to 4OD.
Yeah.
And then I was going, oh, is it all 4? No, it's just called Channel 4 now. And I watched two episodes of Brian and Maggie, which is just out since mid-January. I don't know if there's more than two episodes. I think it's done at two episodes. Steve Coogan was in it, and it was really good. And there's a YouTube video of the two main actors talking about the making of the programme out on YouTube as well, which I saw... Yeah, saw at the end of a programme on TV, which alerted me to watch it. But that was on demand. Yeah. And I suppose that's where pretty much everybody's gone now. Like, linear is almost the rarer thing, is it?
Yeah, and one thing that I find interesting that we've spoken about back to the start of the conversation, where channels are leaving and standard definitions leaving, is I find it almost humorous that it's still there, because for me, like, I'm streaming 4K on Netflix, I'm streaming HD across everything else, I pay for YouTube Premium, sometimes I'm watching an 8K, not that my laptop or TV really needs 8K YouTube videos, but it is available, and like, to watch standard definition's wild to me. Like, it really does feel like I'd need to be stuck in a camper van somewhere to watch standard definition.
Oh, standard would be rare. Most of the offerings, okay, some are standard definition across. My TV service in the main is Vodafone, which is kind of niche. It's not very popular, but it comes with my broadband. It's not, you know, tied to it. I could choose not to have television. but television that comes with the broadband is Vodafone, and it's mainly high definition HD. It's a couple of channels. I think Sky News is in standard definition, as it would be on Serviu. But in supplement to my Vodafone, I have a free-to-air box, which is quite high-end. I've had a lot of free-to-air boxes over the years, but this is a combi box that does digital terrestrial, not Serviu approved, but works with the Irish terrestrial stations, and it does high definition, not any ultra HD or 4K, but high definition free to air, and it's called Z Gemma. It costs about £65 on Amazon, and it's quite advanced in that it really can provide the TV streams across your whole network at home. So wherever you want to pick up, any room, any device, you can pick up a signal over an IP stream, and there's a graphical user interface for it. Z Gemma, I find it really good. I think it's the 8th edition that I have, 8 or 8.1. 9 is out now, but it's really, really good.
Not sponsored.
Nothing sponsored. So the topic is channels disappearing. And I'm kind of saying it's not even noticed by your generation, and there's a generational divide in this podcast, that people don't have water cooler moments about linear broadcast television. Maybe the traitors, or is there definitely an article in front of that, traitors? Is that
maybe.
Do people talk about Love Island or anything that's kind
of... Now, I'm not around people who do, but I do know that people do religiously watch Love Island and talk about that, and that has a global reach as well. And then, maybe Traitors and Task, I can never say that, Taskmaster as well. Even in the US, because I think Channel 4 put entire episodes up on their YouTube, so they get a US audience there.
Speaking of putting things to YouTube, Channel 4 have begun doing that, and programmes like Hollyoaks first broadcast on YouTube now before they broadcast on the network.
Interesting.
On the network, the traditional network. Obviously, just being clever, ask themselves, where are the audience for this content, this demographic? And the answer being, well, the audience are over here and we're not over there, so let's go over there and be where the audience are already assembled.
Yeah,
that's not rocket science, but it's not done.
Yeah,
it's like RTE, BBC do not put their stuff on YouTube before it broadcasts anywhere else. It's very much a digital first strategy, which is encouraged by regulators. Ofcom and Commission of Man would, have provisions for supporting digital first. Now, it doesn't exclusively mean that you put it on YouTube first, but that's an option.
I think it's wise. So I have pros and cons, like I've things that I praise them on for that, and I do have a criticism. But what I have seen them do is they've played to YouTube's algorithms very cleverly. So documentaries on Channel 4 have their own YouTube channel. So that's Untold and all of those. But then you get like other forms of content have different channels. So they play to the algorithm where YouTube requires a second or a third channel if you want to talk about a different topic for success. But where that strategy is really clever is that they beat people to pirating their content on YouTube. So a lot of like the Amblin service programs, like, and 24 Hours in A&E or Police Custody.
999 or...
Yeah, all of emergency. Those that get ripped and put on YouTube, they've just taken that back, which is obviously quite clever.
Would you say that's why they've done it, is to beat the pirates or the... Did you call them pirates?
Yeah, it kind of is pirates.
Would it not just be savvy business sense to be where the eyeballs are?
I think the pirates made them realise that. I don't think it's necessarily just that strategy. But if you know, tell us.
And it was very slow in the realisation that that was going on. And would that be because in the early days of YouTube, takedown requests would have been honoured very quickly and very easily?
Yeah.
But nowadays, less so? Or is there more leniency to taking copyright material from a broadcaster and putting it up lock, stock and barrel and it not being taken down?
I think it's a slower process.
Does it get demonetized immediately?
It does get demonetized very, very quickly. I think it's also probably why John Oliver uploads all of the key stories. And even though HBO stopped doing that in the last season, they had to start it again and are now actually uploading everything from the first season to now. Because they realized that people did start pirating it off of HBO Max again onto YouTube.
I see Jimmy Carr doing this with YouTube, and he's putting up full-length versions of 9 out of 10 Cats and other programs he's been in from a couple of years ago, and they're going up in the last couple of days onto his own YouTube channel. And I realised this because for some strange reason I have an RSS reader that is following an RSS search for Jimmy Carr, and I see the upload frequency that he has to his own YouTube, because the YouTube stream has also got an RSS feed. Every YouTube channel has an RSS feed. Kids, you didn't... What's the RSS? Ask your grandfather.
Ask a RSS. YouTube's A-B testing of uploading podcasts, depending on if your channel's verified or not.
Why would YouTube still have RSS when its parent, Google, killed RSS many years ago? Okay, RSS lives on, but when Google Reader went and Google really poo-pooed the freedom of syndication over RSS, why would they still have it? I suppose just legacy, or it needs to be there for some of the functionality.
That's a great question. I actually don't have an answer for that.
Let's put RSS. I'm going to write that down now. We're going to come back to that because it's something, it's something we know quite a bit about. It's rise, it's fall, it's staying power in the syndication of really simple stuff. Really simple syndication. Is that what they used to call it? RSS had another name as well. But let's move on to something I know a little bit about and you probably know a lot less, is okay. That we've got a new government in Ireland.
Yay.
We had an election, was that November?
November, yeah.
And they've met for what, one day since November? And this is February.
It's a really clever strategy on how to get the most amount of holidays possible. They're watching those YouTube or those Instagram reels being like, if you take a holiday on this day coming up to a bank holiday, you get more days.
Now, hang on, what date was election day?
Oh, it was the last Friday. Was it the last Friday or the second?
So the whole of November, the whole of December, the whole of January off, effectively. Yeah. They were in for one day. They eventually elected the Taoiseach last week. And now they've sorted out their speaking rights or non-speaking rights for government backbenchers that come from a technical group of independents.
I'd love to know if... how many of them went away to like Greece or Spain or just avoided winter? And that's why they were away for so long. Was like, I just need some sunshine.
Maybe the 9 members of the Green Party who didn't get re-elected went to Greece or Spain. But they didn't fly.
By boat.
So, so they're still on their way there. Only joking. And look, they deserve a holiday after the innings they just did in the last 5 years. So what a new government means is that you get a programme for government, and that is a document that the government parties who come together to form the coalition will agree on. And it's the things that they kind of say aspirationally, it's their mission and vision for the next 5 years. This is what we are here to do. And I've scanned it left, right and centre for terms referring to television and radio and media. And I just report in that a lot of the things in the programme for government have already been delivered. They've been delivered not just aspirationally or in press releases. They've been delivered in budgets for 2024 and budgets for 2025. The budget back in October.
And that's why they get a good long holiday.
But they make a new document for a new 5 years, and most of their commitments have already been delivered. So... where's the aspiration? Where's the, you know, pushing out the boat. Where's the future? Mm. And, you know, what will media look in 5 years' time? Things are happening so fast. Where is their vision and their program for government when it comes to media things? If you read the program for government, by and large, very positive, supporting text that says they'd like to do this and do that and do the other, and check it, in the main, they've already done it. They have delivered funding for this, that and the other, and it's already been promised to people. That money might not have been delivered yet because it's budget 25, but it's on its way. And as soon as they can get legislation through, people can start spending that money.
Yeah.
So Irish language is going to do well in the next 5 years in media. Not necessarily because of the programme for government, but because the way that future funding is moving, there's going to be commitments to 25% of output content on media funding is going to be in the Irish language.
That's
really, it's already started. So back in August, Commissioner Mann opened up a round of funding for local democracy and courts reporting, €6 million for 2025. And the government in Budget 25 have committed another €6 million for another year, so 2 years of this fund. That's €12 million in total, and it hasn't started yet. And it will have 25% of content output available in the Irish language, or not available in, made in the Irish language, which is great for the Irish language. Also, get this, all the content that's going to be made on those two schemes,
mm-hmm,
with 12 million quid over 2 years making it, all the content becomes open source, available to anybody 7 days after it being made. It's got to be uploaded to a centralised portal and anybody can reuse content that has been made under this scheme.
Oh, wow.
And it being local democracy and courts reporting, not necessarily out of date 7 days after use.
Yeah.
So there'll be a big pool of content available to media practitioners who didn't make the content in the first place to reuse it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's very interesting.
But other than that, I've no comments outside of the triangulation of politics, technology and media to say. I didn't really pick up anything on technology from the programme for government. Possibly some green tech things are taking a backward step with the lack of a green party in the new government. So the difference between the new government and the old government is the Green Party are not there. And there's 10 independents who are backing up the government. The two Healy Rays from Kerry and 8 independents in the Michael Lowry group. And maybe just to throw on top of that, there has been a political wrangle for the last couple of weeks, which had some quite stormy scenes in Dáil Éireann. That's our parliament, if you're not familiar with the term Dáil Éireann, where they tried to elect the Taoiseach and it didn't happen on the day they intended it to happen because there was a lot of argy-bargy and aggro in the Dáil, a lot of protesting and standing up and sitting down. And I don't know if anyone was expelled. And I think the House was suspended a number of times. Not sure if anyone was expelled, but they didn't get the vote through for the Taoiseach till the following morning because there was a big row about the rights of this independent group of 10 to speak in the Dáil as government supporting TDs in a technical group speaking in opposition speakers' time. So you're going to have a situation where TDs who support the government were going to be given time to ask questions of the government they support.
Yeah.
So it was dicey for a while, but the Ceann Comhairle, that's our Speaker of the House, decided that that wouldn't be possible under current standing orders because, hey presto, 3 legal advices that she got, the current standing orders don't allow for that.
Yeah.
So they have to go along with what the standing orders say. Now it's not going to happen. But what's going to happen is they're going to relook at the standing orders, change the rules, and probably give a lot more backbench TDs from the government side and possibly from the opposition side opportunities to speak in the parliament. So I can remember a time before the technical groups were able to organise in the way that they did and the number of people who would have to be in a technical group to get speaking time. It's very important. Without speaking time, it's hard to have any form of democracy where opposition holds government to account. And I suppose any erosion of that was what the battle was all about. So the battle has been kind of stopped for the moment, but I think it'll pick itself up again when the government, who have the votes, will drive through reform of speakers, you know, rights for all TDs, which sounds like a good thing. Let them speak. Did you pick this story up at all as it flew through the social media that you watch your news on?
I did. I actually was trying to watch. I was trying to watch it live online, and after, I think it was the second time they were suspended, and it was on a break, and then I went into a work call for an event that it turns out I didn't need to do production on in the end. So I missed out on it, and I didn't get back to it. I think I've been very bombarded with American news. I said we weren't going to dig too much into that today, but I am curious of your opinion or thoughts so far on politics, on Blue Sky in particular, and that move from Twitter into all sorts of places, be that TikTok and TikTok's alleged algorithm changes over the past few weeks, or how are you finding politics and new media spaces online?
I would have to say that Blue Sky, I haven't really seen a lot of overt political messaging and conversations. Yes, it would be a place where a lot of Twitter exiters, ex-exiters, if you can say that way, people who've left X and gone over to Blue Sky, that they would be of a particular political leaning. And that's not surprising, but it's not very overt. I think it's very much like Twitter in the early days. It's all comers, and it hasn't got a strong political edge, at least in the feed that I'm seeing. And I'd be looking at the discovery part and the For You part, or the following part. And I'm also following the news there. Are they called channels? They're not called channels. What are they called?
Feeds.
Feeds. So I have a news feed, which is curated by a human, which is interesting. And I have another feed. I have a feed of radio stuff, which seems to be more music than radio.
Interesting.
A lot of music discovery in the radio feed that I follow. But no, I'm not picking it up. I'm not on TikTok. I've tried it a couple of times over the years and well sampled it, but I'm just not there. It's not for me, and not all social medias are for everybody. And I always say, be on one of them, be on all of them, but do one of them really well.
Yeah.
And my one that I did really well all through the years, probably 17 years this March, I joined Twitter, and I put a lot of time and a lot of me into Twitter through the messages I would have put there and the interactions and conversations that I had. And it's now owned by Elon Musk since November 23, and the place is a lot less friendlier a place to be nowadays than it used to be. Then again, you know, these social medias are the most friendly in their infancy, when there's a smaller group of tightly tied people who really get along. That's when it's most fun. It didn't take Musk, or it just needed to become really big before the fun went out of Twitter, and it was gone long before Elon Musk arrived.
That is true.
I was about a million people. I was about the millionth person onto Twitter. It was out about 9 months when I joined it. And I think Elon came along 2 years later in 2009. Wow. And he was, I think there was 44 million people on Twitter when he joined. If you look at his, you know, the way there used to be a number, sequential number for your member number, that would be still there for every user on X. And his would be about 44 million.
Wow.
How do I remember these things? Because he purchased it for 44 billion. And he was the 44th million, like in that millionth, 44 million user of the service. And he came in around 2009. That's massive growth in 2 years, 2007 to 2009.
Yeah.
To grow 43 million people. That's massive. Actually,
yeah, that makes Blue Sky kind of on the same track. I was in, I think, the first 3 million through invite links. But on that, and I know we said we weren't doing any research, but this post stuck in my head, and I keep saying to people, I just call them tweets, even though it's Blue Sky and Mastodon. Like, I do agree with some internet folk saying that, like, maybe we should just take tweet as the what we call it. But there was a post by Rose, who is one of, I believe, five people who work for Blue Sky, posted about the top 10 links that people have been, like, the top 10 domains traffic is going to from Blue Sky posts in the last month. What are the top three?
The top three outbound links from Blue Sky, so Blue Sky users, I would think we're going to discount links to Blue Sky accounts, obviously, so not Blue Sky.
Not Blue Sky, no.
Not Blue Sky. So, yeah, I was counting that out. So I'd say TikTok in there.
No, it's actually not in the top 10.
And you're looking for the top three.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just give you three. My first guess was TikTok, and it's not in the top 10. I'm going to guess CNN.
That's number 9.
It's number 9. I need to do better than CNN. Outbound links for our posts that people who are on Blue Sky. Some print journalism in the United States. Some Wall Street Journal or Washington Post or...
Washington Post is number 8.
Is number 8, okay. Okay, give me a clue. Off the top 10, how many of them are media organisations? Like big
two.
Media? Oh, we've named the two then, 9 and 8.
Oh, no, sorry. Of the top 10, you've 5.
5. So of the top three, two of them are media, and I haven't named them. Fox News?
No. And I think this comes back to, what is the demographic of people moving away from Twitter?
Ah, so MSNBC.
Actually not on the list.
Because that's kind of one of the most progressive or left-leaning TV networks in the US.
It did surprise me.
Two micro and niche Democracy Now and things like that aren't going to be there. No, you're going to have to just tell me. This is painful.
Number one, The Guardian. Number two, New York Times. Number three, Substack. Wow. Number four, YouTube.
Stop on those first three. You're talking long reads. You're not talking memes and cartoons and things.
These are long people reads. Who want information, who want to dig in, who want to support people. And I think that's where
The Guardian is number one.
Yeah. Now, in the last 30 days for the month of January 2025, The Guardian was number one.
And are they doing a particular kind of first 100 days of Donald Trump watch kind of in a particular way, like it's Nature Watch or something? Like, are they running live blogs? What's going on?
I haven't seen anything in particular. I do think that maybe they're... columns are doing well. Maybe their opinion pieces are driving more conversation. But it is, like, NPR is number 10. X does come in at 7, where I think that's a bitch about what's going on.
Link to my old account.
Yeah, and it's like, have you retained an account to see what's happening over there? But yeah, that really surprised me. I think that's... that will be one to watch.
It's definitely a good kind of baseline as to what people are interested in over there. Can I change topics to, we've loads to get through, but I'm going to probably start winding it up time-wise. But artificial intelligence is on the march, it's on the rise, it's huge. It's almost as much on the rise and on the march as fascism is in politics. And maybe there's a link there. Race. But there's been a lot of topical stories about DeepSeek and Alibaba and OpenAI and all these kind of competitive moves within the last 7 days that have shifted the markets, the gods that are the markets that must be bowed down to, only jesting slightly. But I'm going to ask a different question, and the question is that traditionally, the focus in STEM was to encourage people to get coding and learn how to code. And I was all behind that movement and all behind that idea, as are you.
Mm-hmm.
But in the era of AI, where artificial intelligence bots are now to become your assistant, so you don't use Stack Overflow and try and work it out yourself and debug and challenge yourself and learn. You now cede this to an AI bot to work it out for you, or to design it and make it for you from scratch. In that era, and I'm kind of seeding the question out to you, that what is the messaging that should be given to young people to be encouraged into STEM and coding if AI is going to do all the coding? So should the message change? Should it be that the human should be interested and inquiring and doing things such that we'll need code, that it's all right for the bot to write for you? Or should you be learning in first principles and avoid the bots for now at all costs? That's a very leading question, but I know you know a lot about this, so I'd love to hear your answer.
I've been thinking about this. I've been in conversations with developers who...
Can I just say, this is not... Like, I just put that down as a topic. We didn't even say, will you have an answer for this? I just know you so well. I know you'll have an answer for this. Go ahead.
I was thinking about this walking up the road.
Today?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Google's recent AI news has really hit my gut. An organization that always said we're not going to be evil, essentially dropping that tagline quietly in the past, but like really dropping it in regards to AI. I keep coming back to, like, wow, I've spent so long building a career in tech, and I'm like, this doesn't feel like a safe place anymore. And I've been in rooms with developers recently who have said, we're not going to hire any junior software engineers. What is the point? AIs can do that for us. We don't need someone who's still learning to come in and sit here and have to ask and answer questions to. We can just pay an AI to do that. But on the flip side, STEM is not just big tech. On the flip side, we have scientists in labs, we have mathematicians, we have so many other STEM subjects who do require programming. And I think they're the elements of programming that AI isn't going after, because it's more difficult, or you don't want to trust a bot. Like, it's fine to trust an AI to build your front-end UI elements of a platform. What is the risk there? You're not developing... you're not looking at sequencing data or something that actually impacts lives as deeply. So for that, I think there is absolutely still a place to learn to program, and especially to understand it. And something I've spent a lot of time doing is being in groups of people who recognize, especially when teaching kids, that you have to learn how to debug, you have to know why it failed and figure out what the problem is and understand the code. And I think that's still important and still worth doing. I just don't know if big tech is the reason, and like software engineering is the reason to go after learning to program anymore.
So a different question, have you tried AI and tested its abilities to code you what you want coded from. I suppose you need to get really descriptive in your request. And what have you been enlightened by the results that you've seen?
I haven't spent a lot of time with it. Programming isn't something I spend a lot of time with. Though I have, for personal curiosity and professional reasons, used it to solve challenges on LeetCode and other challenge software, just to see if it passes. You look like you have a question to that.
Well, I was going to kind of go into the validity of thinking it should be ever the way it always was, or here comes AI and kids don't need to learn code anymore. And I was looking, as I always do, for an analogy. And your granny and my granny, your great-grandmother, would have knitted, and not knitted for fun or for pleasure. They would have knitted jumpers and hats and scarves and whatever, you crochet things, to create garments that would actually be worn by the recipient of the gift or the garment that would be made. And they needed to know how to do that. And then along comes mass-produced clothing that will give you a jumper from your multiple discount store for less than €20.
Yeah.
$20. So people don't need to be at home knitting for need anymore. So I'm going to ask, does that analogy kind of hold a bit when it comes to coding? That you're not going to absolutely need coding because it's become factory-based, homogenized, and a service now does it for you, an AI bot. But it doesn't mean that you can't do it for fun. And all my coding is for fun. I don't code for work. I code for fun. I do a lot of coding for fun. But also that, just by the first principles kind of that, you know, yes, tell them that the genie is out of the bottle and this is there, but also learn the basics too. And because I find that you can step into any language once you know the basics of coding, and you might start off with your variables and your loops and your logical kind of queries, and then you can take that to any language.
Yeah, I think you know, you could dig into how in a climate crisis you might need to know how to knit. And that is something that, you know, we might need to consider as a society. But yeah, do it for fun, but knowing how to do it. I mean, like, also another conversation you could go into is we don't have crochet machines. So in fast fashion environments, we have knitting machines. We don't have crochet. That's still hand done. So if Shein is selling you crochet, red flag. But to programming, like, yeah, there's no... I have spent quite a lot of time in the past few years around programming for fun and programming challenge. And there is an onslaught of people who will submit AI challenges or AI solutions to challenge sites like LeetCode or other software for interview prep. You could do that, but like, what benefit is that to you?
So at interview, often pseudocode is the kind of universal language of code. Is like, show me how you would apply yourself to this, you know, coding problem, and be language neutral, just do it in pseudocode. But would the middle ground between AI coding and human first principles coding be libraries? Like, is that kind of being all reliant on libraries to do every aspect of the difficult stuff in code? Like, nobody ever wants to rewrite or reinvent wheels every time. So libraries are there and they've existed for a long while. But giving libraries to kids, this is software libraries, to kids, isn't going to really help them grow and develop as they approach code projects.
So, like, chat AIs can tell you what library it thinks you should be using for the code that it's given you. It's not installing that on your machine to test it, but, like, so you still need to understand how to use that. and apply that information. I have recently heard conversations of people saying, oh, well, you couldn't use ChatGPT or other software for that because it can't create a budget and it can't do X. And every time I've heard people give those examples, it is because they don't know how to interact with the software. Like, you can definitely get it to give you a budget if you give it the right information and know how to prompt it. And I think there is a balance in, like, knowing how to code, one, for fun, two, because it's good for the brain, three, actually you do need to go and use AI a little bit because you need to know how to prompt it, and we should be reverse engineering it in the same way that you learn how to successfully do an internet search with DuckDuckGo or Google or someone else. Because you can talk to it and not get very far, or you can know how to use it and actually save yourself time or find the answer to a problem that you have.
Are you saying the jury's out, or there's just different strokes for different folks?
Yeah, I think there's different applications. I definitely think you should know what you're doing, but you can definitely ask it something. You can definitely lean on it. You can definitely look for inspiration. But then, I mean, if we look at generative AI, you don't own the rights to use any imagery that comes out of a generative AI.
You so, don't?
No. It's owned by the AI company. So if you're working in a traditional media company, be that in television or elsewhere, you can't use the graphics that are coming out of an AI in Canva or from...
And do they protect their rights? Do they police it and come looking for royalties? Or
I don't think we've seen that yet.
But did they not steal it off somebody else in the first place? Is that like stolen goods getting a lick of paint and saying, do you want to buy this bicycle? It's pink, or it used to be orange.
Well, this is the question with DeepSeek, isn't it? That OpenAI are crying and thrown a tantrum because DeepSeek stole their data. And I'm like, you stole everybody else's data.
They stole everybody else's. Their bots come at my websites 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, forever.
Yeah.
And they're all coming now thinking we need our own large language model, and they're coming stealing. They are taking files off of my server as they find them and using them for their own purposes. And then someone else steals theirs and they cry foul.
Yeah. I mean, audio, generative audio models and like even in text for scripting have stolen millions of YouTube videos. But if a YouTuber were to steal 45 seconds of something else, they lose monetization, they're penalized, their channel's at risk.
So in the past, politics and legislation would always have been accused of not keeping pace with technology. Now it's kind of intellectual property law is not keeping pace with technology, which is moving at such great speeds. I'm going to close up with a couple of things. One is a topic we're going to talk about. Well, let's talk about in our next episode. But for homework, I'd say is go check out a film that's streaming on Netflix worldwide. Netflix does stream everything worldwide, or is it broken into regions?
It is regionalized.
It is regional. But it's not like your DVD regions. It's a little bit more open than that. The film is called Join or Die. Join or Die. And it's wonderful. It's based on the work of Robert Putnam, and he wrote the book Bowling Alone in the early 1990s. And it's what topic area are we in here? Is about the... It's about society, and it's about clubs, and it's about joining clubs being good for democracy. And when joining clubs declines, it's really bad for democracy. I got the book for Christmas. Thank you very much, Vanessa.
Welcome.
I'm still reading it. I'm reading the index at the back for my favourite topics and words, and I'm going into the book. It is that kind of deep dive type book. This is a doorstopper book. It's huge. But this is a modern edition of the 1990s version of the book, and it's been updated and modernized. I also have Upswing, his other book, but I have that on Kindle and I'm flicking through that as well. But if you want to digest the idea, because often these great books can be kind of told in a couple of pages, the central idea, and sometimes that's the bit that you want, you'll get that from this hour and a half documentary. Join or Die on Netflix, and it was long listed for an Oscar.
Yes.
Didn't make the shortlist.
Just missed out, I think, on the shortlist.
Yeah, but it's one hell of a documentary. I would implore you to go watch this, because we're going to talk about it in the next episode. Park that there, and just as we finish, the last thing we're going to look at on the episode, our first ever podcast together. We didn't do podcasting back in 2004 together, did we?
No, but my first ever pink MP3 player that could hold 12 songs and about 5 audio files definitely had small 10-minute podcasts by me. In the same room that you would have recorded your podcasts.
Was that a USB kind of...
Yeah.
MP3 player? USB stick. I remember that. Yes.
It was curved and had some like glitter paint applied to
it. Yes, I remember that. But you would have kind of tried to copy what your father was doing. What age were you then in 2004?
I think it would have been a little bit later, but...
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow. So it took us, we were late bloomers, because we were looking at this in 2004 and done podcasting for myself and for many other people down through the years, but not really together. So no. I'm glad we've started this.
How many radio shows together?
Well, probably forget the shows, because they're hard to count, but the stations would be easier to count. We'll try and
research that one
for the next episode. So just as we finish, you've got your homework, watch that film, Join or Die, Netflix. I want to just say maybe a project that you're working on, I'll start, and I'm looking at it here on screen. This is a 55-inch. Oh yeah, we're in radio world, so we have to describe, tell the story. So there's a 55-inch television screen here, and I'm looking at a screen radar of Dublin, and I have all the airplanes that are flying over Dublin airspace, landing and taking off, and it is listening to the beacons on all of the planes, ADS-B, and it is picking up currently 4 aircraft visible with positions, altitude, speed, heading, and all the information you'd need to know about the airplanes, where they are. It's been driven by a Raspberry Pi, which is on my windowsill upstairs, and connected to that is one USB stick with a RTL SDR type stick, which is, what would you price a Raspberry Pi at? 50 quid? 100 quid? It's a Pi 5.
It used to be 35, but about 58.
It's a Pi 5, so about 60 quid of a Pi, and about 20 quid of a USB dongle that gives you the ability to tune into the frequencies of the airplane beacons, and it's pumping out my own service here, so it's called PiAware. And okay, if I just plug all that together, it's not much of a project, because it's like, you know how to install software on a Pi, but I've overlaid the audio of air traffic control and other radio services into the screen and integrated it all into one. I can't give you a link as to where to look at it, but if you go to flightaware.com and if you search for PiAware, you can see some of the GitHub of the project and how to get yourself some of the source code and install it on your own Raspberry Pi. And I'm having fun with that. And that's my project. So I'll probably put a link in the show notes. What's your project? What are you working on? If you're not working on it, what would you like to be working on?
I'm trying to decide if I realive, pause a hiatus on a 8-year-old YouTube channel.
Is it the one that checks out the quality of public toilets?
No, I can't do that project for other reasons anymore.
Okay.
But no, this is Echoing STEM, which focused initially on music and STEM a little bit. But trying to reinvent it into a video essay series on technology in its current state.
Ooh. So it wouldn't be music based anymore?
No.
So just,
I feel like that needs a second channel.
One woman with a television rig or a video rig and going out and interviewing people and things like that.
Possibly.
Yeah. So Echoing Stem on YouTube to see the old stuff. It's up there. It'll be there forever. Unless you delete it, it'll be up there forever.
Some of it's there.
Yeah. So I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to the first episode of Breaking Glass. Breaking Gloss. We do have one listener. We are doing that radio thing where we're focused on one listener. And our listener is in the room with us today. See how I said room, not studio. In the room is Corey the cat. He has patiently waited and listened to the entire conversation. Say his name, see if he twigs his ears.
Hi, Corey. No. No,
he's pretending to be asleep. Half his brain is awake at the moment, but he has been listening to us podcasting away here, and he hasn't had any questions for us.
No, we're very exciting. We do put cats to sleep. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. If it worked for babies, it might be a good thing.
If you want more details about this podcast, email us breaking@radio.ie, and that is the email address. Also, the website breaking.radio.ie is where you can subscribe to our RSS feed that will have this show and all future shows. And then with your podcast reader, listener, you can automatically get the next episode. Available in all bad podcast players. The good ones will catch on later and they'll find it. But thanks for listening. Final words?
Good chat.
Have you timed it?
No.
Will we be surprised? We're not even looking at a clock here. But we went through 70% of the notes that we were to cover, and we'll carry over to the next one and put some new stuff in on that as well. We'll define a frequency and when we'll be back. And yeah, 73s, as they say in radio. Thanks for listening. Over and out.
Thank you.